Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
All right. Hey, folks. Welcome to Inclusive Collective, where we share stories and learnings of inclusive people, organizations, and innovations. I am your co-host, Nadia Butt. I'm a talent development and belonging strategist and researcher on identity and inclusion. And I am here with my co-host, Rob Hadley, a people and culture strategist specializing in diversity, equity, inclusion, and employee experience. Hello, Rob. What is shaking?
Hello, Nadia. How are you? Thanks for that introduction, by the way. Do you have any other co-hosts? Do you have other co-hosts?
No, I know. I started to say, and my other co-host.
One of my co-hosts.
No, that's not plural.
I didn't know about these other co-hosts.
No, just you. Only you.
Excellent. Nadia, what's going on? Can I tell you what I'm excited about right now and see if you're excited about something similar?
I would love to hear that. Yeah.
All right. We've started the hockey season, and basketball starts next week. Your reaction?
NBA or NHL, or do you mean
NHL
like
started this week?
You mean like your kid? Okay. No. Okay.
Yeah.
Sports.
So your reaction to my level of excitement?
Sports.
What's
like
your,
really exciting?
On a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you?
I'm excited.
Zero.
Okay. NBA. No. NBA probably like a 6. NHL maybe like a 5 or 4. I think what I get excited about is your excitement, because I know like every week you're going to be like, oh, did you hear about this? Or like, I'm following this team. And then that's how I get my updates. And then I also just appreciate the fact that there's always like a good story or two that comes out of NHL or NBA because of like inclusion. And so it's just there's always a learning opportunity, I feel like. So there's always something to discuss.
We could probably do an entire workplace culture show on sports. There's something every week. Usually
every
it's
week.
Negative and not a great story. I'm excited about the games, the actual games.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited for soccer. I hear there's a World Cup.
There is a World Cup.
During Thanksgiving time. Very excited. I actually do follow that. I wouldn't say I follow, but I watched all the soccer games, matches with my family. We're a big soccer family. So really excited about that.
Well, you know, my family is a Brazilian, right? It's half Brazilian. So you can imagine what my household looks like. It's going to look like in November.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Full of soccer. Love it. All right, let's go to the deets. Here are some workplace DEI stories that we are following this week. Rob, do you want to go with your story first?
Let's start with my story is boring. It's let's talk about gig workers.
Okay.
I'm excited about the second story. So this week, the Biden administration's Department of Labor released a rule that would allow a test to determine whether employees are contractors or employees for companies. It will essentially make it harder to classify gig workers as contractors, and therefore make it more likely employers will have to do things like pay minimum wage, overtime, and contribute to Social Security and unemployment. According to the Pew Center, gig workers are more likely to be Hispanic and Black, and more likely to be treated rudely, feel unsafe, and sexually harassed working in the gig economy. And as you remember, these were the people that did not have access to benefits during the pandemic, which, as you know, is completely over, and we don't have to worry about ever again. Right?
Oh, gosh.
So Nadia, reaction, thumbs up.
Yeah, I mean, so really good that we're shedding some light on that. The gig economy is a big ecosystem. I feel like during the pandemic, I had, if it wasn't like every single one of my friends, it was like every other one of my friends was doing like a side hustle. And I think that's great. Kudos to them. Love. And I think that to be equitable and making sure that people are being paid for their time, and they're provided the right kind of workplace benefits, I think it's a good thing. I'd have to think through what like some negatives are, but I'm not prepared to answer that yet. What are your thoughts? And also, just because my sister listens and she's, you know, she does health policy, the pandemic is over, but COVID is not. So I just feel like we need to like make sure we clarify that.
Yeah, that's breaking news to me out here in Utah. I think it was over in early 2020 here in Utah. So I see it as a trend of very measured policies coming out of the administration, right? We talked about, so you can see that Uber is actually supportive of this change, which is always a little bit concerning when the companies are a little too enthusiastic and supportive of the change.
Right. But like what's the benefit that they're reaping from it, right?
Yeah. Right, right. Well, I think it's they see it as the least bad outcome. They knew the Biden administration was going to do something here, and so they feel like it's probably a more measured plan than what was first proposed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so I say, you know, people say that they want to talk about they want to hear about moderation, that they want that things are too polarized. And I see these things as very measured and very reasonable moves by the administration. So, you know, so thumbs up for, you know, down the middle Joe and his team there. The interesting thing on the startup front is like, if you think about that for a while, it seemed like every startup business model relied on gig workers and relied on cheaper labor and not having to pay benefits. And so now you're starting to see that pendulum swing back toward better treatment for workers and making it harder to classify people as big gig workers. And I think that'll have an impact down the road as well.
Yeah. Let's move on to our second story here.
Yes.
Social media was a buzz this week. The notoriously wholesome show on Netflix called The Great British Baking Show faced backlash this week on their Mexican-themed episode. The Great British Baking Show, for those that don't know, is where they gather amateur bakers to have them compete against each other on the show. NPR noted that the contestants were tasked with creating dishes like tacos and pan dulce and Tres Leches cake. They had the hosts in sombreros and ponchos. They were sarepes, I think that's how you enunciate it, and maracas. Terrible pronunciation on some of the words and foods and culture. And a lot of jokes around Mexican standoffs and other kind of really negative stereotypes. Have you seen this show, Rob? Like, what are your thoughts on this?
Have I seen the British Baking Show ever? The answer is
no.
Okay. And so I know you went back and actually watched the show. And
yeah,
so it sounded like from the accounts that I read that this was particularly egregious in terms of the way that they were presenting Mexican food and culture, right? So like some, they were heavily leaning on stereotypes. They seem unknowledgeable about the food itself. Like they've never actually had the food. Do they not have Mexican food in the UK?
I'm pretty sure they do. Have been there, had it. They have avocados. Like they have. I find this
hard to believe. Yeah, as a person who grew up in the Southwest, southwestern United States. So you actually went back and saw it. Can you tell us what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely some segments that were actually, let me give you the pros. There were actually some interesting places where I found I did gain knowledge. Like I definitely learned more about some Mexican treats, sweet treats that they talked about. So happy to learn that. There were definitely some sections, though, that were culturally insensitive, offensive, and even, like, I would say borderline racist. Actually, I would say racist because they were overt. And I'll get to that in a minute. But there was a lot of kind of cultural appropriation. And I think that's what some of the viewers, you know, were kind of referencing, is that when you're borrowing or stealing from another culture to profit off it, especially from like a marginalized group of people, and you're not giving that culture or those people kind of credit, and again, you're profiting off the episode, that's where the problem lays for me. Mm-hmm. And also you're, you know, perpetuating stereotypes that are said about this group of people. And I think that's not good. So I guess there was a similar situation in season 11 when they did Japanese Week. So I dug a little bit deeper to understand there. And apparently they didn't learn from that lesson and the mistakes that they made. And so the real problem is, like, one, they repeated the issue and they didn't learn. And so, like, to me, you're intentionally now offending people. And that becomes, that's when it becomes overt.
Yeah.
And then, two, the lack of, I think, respect for people. It was in bad taste. The jokes didn't land. And I'm all for jokes, but, like, not at the expense of perpetuating stereotypes, like, of culture and people. And then you're, you know, gaining some profit off of it. And I don't know, as far as I could see, there was, like, no real apology from the show or from Netflix. I think the show did post or tweet a response that was basically making, like, a silly taco joke.
To double down.
They double down. Yeah, they totally double down. And so it just, you know, it's a little disappointing. Any reactions on your end?
No, I think I cultural appropriation can be tricky, right? In this case, it's not so tricky. What happened?
Yeah.
That this is a case of cultural appropriation. I think I was trying to ask myself, what are some things that I could ask myself to say, am I either appreciating or am I appropriating? Right. And so.
And the fact that this is the second time around, like, come on. Like, we're not learning.
Come on.
Come on. Come on.
You should have saved that for the rant.
Yeah.
So thanks for that, Nadia.
Thank you, Sean. Absolutely.
I'm still not watching that show, but thanks so much. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back with Marcos Gonzalez.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Marcos Gonzalez. Marcos is the founder and managing partner of his venture capitalist firm, Vamos Ventures. This fund is focused on Latinx and diverse founders leading early-stage tech-enabled companies. Their mission is to generate market-rate investment returns and deliver meaningful impact through wealth creation, social mobility, unique tech solutions, and by taking a visible and clear stand as Latinx investors. Vamos Ventures has successfully closed Fund 1 at $50 million and is preparing to raise an $100 million Fund 2. To date, the fund has invested in 25 companies, and 22 are led by Latino or Latina entrepreneurs. Marcos is the son of two Mexican immigrants and was raised in an immigrant neighborhood of Los Angeles, where he saw firsthand the resilience, creativity, and entrepreneurialism of the Latinx community. In our conversation, Marcos shared about his formative decision to attend Brown University and then Harvard Business School, leading to early career experiences at Boston Consulting Group, which led him to the world of private equity and eventually to found his own tech company. We join our conversation as Marcos talks about his decision to start Vamos Ventures in 2015.
After a pretty long career in strategy, in private equity investing, and doing a startup, I moved back to California and I started to look into the venture world. And it was clear to me that things were happening and Latinos were not present. I saw a lot of my peers, African-American peers, women and others starting funds related to those communities, and a lot of discussion about it, but very few people were talking about Latinx. And so I looked for a team that was doing something and I didn't find one. And finally, me and a couple of friends said, hey, we have started companies in tech. We've invested in companies. We've run funds. You know, we've done, why don't we do it? And that's kind of what started it. But I felt confident enough to do it, given that I had similar related experience over the previous, you know, 20 years, basically, to do so. And that's what led me to venture. It was a long story there. But
so what were some of the challenges that you faced as an entrepreneur yourself? And did those kind of struggles also inspire you to, you know, be a VC? Because I don't know if those struggles were related in any way, but I'm just curious, like, what was your experience in the startup world as being an entrepreneur yourself?
To answer that one part of your question, which is, did that inspire you to be a VC? No, No is the answer. I did not start Boundless Ventures because I had an experience doing the startup. That experience helps me be a better investor. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And a more empathetic investor. Absolutely. But it wasn't the reverse. I'll tell you, when we started this company, first of all, it was three of us. Always start a company with a partner. To do it alone is very, very, very difficult. Or have a partner at home that's mm-hmm. going to be with you the whole way and knows how to support you, because it is super hard. So I had two partners. One was of Latin American background, but very Americanized and so on. And the other was, you know, white guy, both of them from HBS. We had all the pedigree you could ask for. And our company was a commercial business, nothing to do with consumer products or the Hispanic market or anything like that. And it was very difficult when we were trying to raise $500,000 to get started. Couldn't do it. We were about to quit. The day before we quit, we get a call from someone saying, okay, I'm in for 100. And we immediately called everybody on the list. Yeah. And people said, oh, really? You got 100? All right, I'm in for 25. Next person, okay, I'm in for 50. Next person, right. Okay, I'm in for 10.
Like snowballs.
Yeah, yeah, we ended up raising $800,000. So we got started. And by the way, we were using a BCG office in Boston at the time. That's where we did our startup. Mm-hmm. And it was hilarious because we'd walk in. Of course, we worked at BCG. One of the other guys also worked there too. And we no longer work for BCG, but we'd walk in like, yeah, we know the place. Finally, one day a partner walks in and says, who are you guys? We used to work at BCG. We're starting a company. We're like, who let you in here? We're like, and he's like, you guys got to get out of here. You got 1 week to get out. So to his credit, he gave us another week.
At least he gave you a week.
Exactly.
I thought you were going to say that the people at BCG were like, please take me with you.
Okay. No. You know, we started in the late 90s and 99, actually. And so we ended up raising this money. We started developing a prototype. We wanted to raise $5 million in the next round. Couldn't do it. Again, about to throw in the towel. Literally the week before we threw the towel, we get a call from a VC and they say, you know what? We're in for, you know, $3 million. Immediately called everybody and we ended up raising $8 million. And what it showed me was that you got to keep going. And it always happens at the very end, I guess by definition, but it's always a little bit after what you think you can do. And leveraging the networks, it takes somebody to start. And as an investor, it's absolutely true that for most investors, it's a race to be last. Mm. So if you're a founder and you're raising money, you should know that for most investors, most of them are going to say, I'll be the last guy in. Happy to be the last $100,000 or the last million. Yep. But very few will take that first step. So anyway, we ended up raising money. It was the harshest time to do it. Shortly thereafter, the internet bubble imploded. Mm. Then 9/11 happened. We worked through all of that, but it was a very challenging time. The worst thing for me was that every now and then I would see a Hispanic name or Latino at a fund. And I would think to myself, natural connection. This guy's going to make time for me. And it was all guys. And I say, this guy's going to make time for me. And the worst thing was when he did not respond or with just quick email, sorry, not for us. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And so what we try to do at Vamos Ventures is the values that we're trying to develop and build here are four things. Number one, we recognize the entrepreneur. We see you. We know it's not easy. We've been there too. It is super hard. And we recognize you for doing that. Number two, if you want real feedback, we will give you honest, real feedback. You need to ask for it. Mm-hmm. Number three, if we know anyone in our network that can help you on your journey, we will make that connection. And number four, you will always have an open door here. You're part of the family. Sometimes that's worth more than the money. Sometimes we have founders who say, screw that, Marcos. I don't need to be recognized. I don't need this. I need your money. Mm-hmm. And I have to explain to them, we will review 1,500 companies a year. That's what we're going to review this year. And we say yes to maybe 15. And by the way, those 15 are Latinos and Latinas, just like you. And for some people, that's not good enough. And I get it. It's hard. It's personal. And sometimes it gets to that. But I find that folks usually do come back and say, okay, fine. Who can you introduce me to? What feedback can you give me? And we're happy to do that. This happened recently and somebody was criticizing this founder for being like this. And I thought, don't do that. This is serious for this person. And mm-hmm. they're putting their life on the line here. So mm-hmm. totally get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about Vamos Ventures. And I take it, the fact that you're raising, are you still raising a second fund?
We're about to launch the second fund.
Second fund.
Yeah.
So I feel like your approach and your original thesis, you feel like it's somewhat validated. And you've been doing this since you said 2015. What have you really learned since you started? And based on the original approach that you took, and and has anything changed over the last 5 years?
There's a lot of things which we get to get in so many different directions. But I'll say that starting with the easiest things, I learned that a lot of my experience in the fund world has been absolutely helpful to starting Vamos Ventures, and I think setting us up for a long-term platform of real value creation for our LPs and for our founders. So that's one. Two, I've learned that it can't be everything to everyone. We started out by saying we are a diverse team for diverse founders. Mm-hmm. And technically we are. And we are not exclusive to the Latinx community, but I've learned you have to focus on what you know. And so we no longer shy away from the fact that we say the spirit of Vamos Ventures is investing in this amazing investment opportunity of high growth, large, high growth entrepreneurial asset base that others don't really understand that well, but mm-hmm. we do. And it's a great investment opportunity. And by the way, we're Hispanic too. So it's not the reverse necessarily. It's that this is what it is. And we don't shy away from that. Whereas before we'd always say diverse. And we didn't want anyone thinking that we were just focusing on Latinx. But, 22 out of 25 companies are led by Latino or Latina founders. And that proportion is going to probably remain more or less the same for fund too. Mm-hmm. So we are more convicted than ever that this is an amazing market, community, and demographic to invest in, for mm-hmm. sure. The other thing I think we've learned is that, in 2015, 16, when I was just starting out with the idea, I traveled the country and I found maybe 200 deals to invest in that were, reasonable deals. And as I said earlier, 1,500 deals this year, and I know we're missing a lot of them. And so there's been an explosion. So we've learned that this has been the right call mm-hmm. and we are at the right place. And this is just the beginning. When we started Vamos Ventures, there were no other Latinx investors in a fund, formally as a fund. There mm-hmm. were people out there doing stuff and being engaged, but today there are. And mm-hmm. even if they're not specifically focused on Latinx, they're diverse and they include a lot of Latinx entrepreneurs, some of your previous guests. So now it's going to be about how do you differentiate yourself with other Latinx investors and folks that include Latinx. And that's a good thing for us because it forces us to be thoughtful and strategic about the future and what we're trying to accomplish and achieve. The other thing, the last thing I'll say about what we've learned is that money is only part of the problem or the challenge. Mm-hmm. And if you want to invest in any diverse community, African-American, Hispanic, primarily, in those two communities, channeling capital to those founders and entrepreneurs, that's half the battle. The other half of the battle is channeling mentorship, guidance, support, access to networks. That is, in the venture world, different than the private equity world, that is equal in value to money, if not more important.
How do you see your role as a VC when you bring on an entrepreneur or founders, maybe they receive their, Series A, and they start to maybe build their team? How are you encouraging diverse teams, the building of even from, a customer standpoint, looking at diverse set of customers? What role does a VC, or maybe not in general a VC, but Vamos Ventures play in kind of understanding and building, the support that's needed for these kind of entrepreneurs and thinking in a different way?
Generally speaking, there are three ways you add value. I won't spend a lot of time on this question, but I think most VCs will answer the same thing. And that's business development relationships, introducing them to potential customers, two, talent and everything related to them. When they're hiring folks or looking for a partner or managing people, we can be helpful in that respect as well. Mm-hmm. So talent and people, business development, talent, people. The third one is capital. introducing them to other investors and having those relationships ready to go, or helping them think through those relationships, or preparing them for it. So we're working with one of our companies today. In fact, we'll get together again today. We'll review the deck for their fund next round. And we're taking a very active role and literally going through each slide, debating it, coming up with new slides, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It's such an important tool, your pitch deck. You can't afford to not make it as good as possible. Those are the three areas that most people kind of focus on: talent, business development, and money. The fourth that we would kind of say that maybe is on top of that is we just had a summit. I mentioned one of our founders earlier with Rob. We had a mm-hmm. summit for our founders in San Francisco. We had, I don't know, maybe 20 out of our 25 companies participate. Not all of them are Latinx founders, but most of them mm-hmm. are. And what we tried to build is this is safe space. And everybody here is a person of color or Latino or Latina. And so are we. And mm-hmm. we've been where you are too. And we've tried to raise money too. And we have raised money. And everybody here has raised money, by the way. And some of you have raised a lot of money. And but we're a community. We can be vulnerable here. And we spent almost all our time just introducing ourselves to each other. Could you imagine? We had 20 founders there, Latino-Latina founders there mostly. And mm-hmm. most of them did not know each other. And it is always amazing to me. We do a lot of stuff. We go to different cities and we kind of do events. And we'll, even in Los Angeles, we'll have an event and we'll have, call it, I don't know, 30 Latino-Latina founders there that show up. Most of them do not know each other.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it is a really interesting to see. And I don't think that's specific to the Latino community. I think that's in other communities as well.
Sure.
So one of the things we're trying to do too is make these connections. You are now mm-hmm. part of each other's network and support mm-hmm. system, guidance, and mentorship with somebody who gets you, you know.
Yeah.
Now, maybe not all 20 people here will get you, but one or two probably will, who sure. you are and your experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's super valuable.
I have so many thoughts on that, but I'm just thinking about the numbers. And I think if you look at the last few years, certainly the vintages, you're starting to see more investment in Hispanic Latinx founders, but you still see these numbers that are just embarrassingly low. They're almost incredible, right? So you've got 22 Hispanic Latino founders. What do you think's going on there? What do you see when you see the numbers every year? And I think if it's 2% of venture money going to Latinx founders, what's going on? Why haven't there been some acceleration even past what we've seen in the last couple of years?
I think that there are two phases. The first phase is the existing VC community and the demographic. The demographic mm-hmm. is incredibly young.
Mm-hmm.
By definition, by nature, it's just very young. And I think what we're seeing in terms of our pipeline growing reflects the coming of age of the Latino demographic. 80,000 mm-hmm. Latinos turn 18 every month. 80,000.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
That's incredible. When you look at the city of LA, 50% of this city is Latino. But the average age is, 28. And mm-hmm. when you look at K through 12, it's not 50%, it's 70%. And when you look at just grade school, it's 75%, 80%. So it's yeah. super young. Give us some time, to develop those folks. Number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the existing ecosystem of the venture capitalists. I have a lot of friends who are VCs from, HBS or from Brown. Mm-hmm. And when I was starting Bubbles Ventures, I met with all of them. And I said, what's going on? Do you not see Latino entrepreneurs or Latina entrepreneurs? Do you not like us? And they'd say, Marcos, look, my job is to generate returns for my investors.
Mm-hmm.
And I invest in people I know or people I've invested in before. And if you bring me a great Latino or Latina entrepreneur, happy to look at it. But my job is returns, not sure. diversifying this industry. On the one level, I say, I can't argue with that. That is your job and you have to do your best job, right? Best you can do. But then I take myself up to 30,000 feet and I say, but here's the problem with this, friend from, HBS or from Brown, mm-hmm. is that because all of you do this, we will never get into that system.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because you will continue to. So what I learned was in my very first or second investment, the guy I invested in, who's an amazing person who unfortunately passed away, may rest in peace, because he was an amazing guy, Latino. When he sold his company and I made money, I called him and I said, hey, when you're ready for your next company, I'm your first guy in. And at that moment, light bulb. That's mm-hmm. exactly what every VC says. And that's mm-hmm. what Sequoia said 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they've been saying it ever since. And they have their folks already. And if it's not that person, it's going to be that person's buddy or that person's kid or that mm-hmm. person's cousin, you know, et cetera. And so it is a, by nature, this industry we play in of early stage investing, networks and relationships are super important, right? And so very young mm-hmm. and a network driven kind of business. That's sure. the first phase. The second part is asset allocators and diverse investors like me. We need to find diverse investors like me who care about it enough to say, I know my job is to generate returns for my investors, but I want to do more than that. I have a different role. And my role is not just investor. It's something else. And we need people like that. But it's hard for those people to get started because it takes you 3 years to raise money mm-hmm. and you have to have relationships to do it. And most people don't have that time right. or those kinds of savings, et cetera, or a partner willing to support them. We went through a golden era of this in the last year, which made things a little differently. But most of the time, it takes you 2-3 years to raise a fund. Mm-hmm. The last part of the second phase is not only do you need people with intention, you need asset owners, asset allocators who also believe. Mm. So foundations, endowments, pensions, et cetera, yep. that say, you know what? We're managing $100 billion. Why don't we take $100 million on that? Mm. And allocate it to 10 diverse managers who are trying to get started. Because not only is it a good idea to do that to develop new relationships, not only will we learn what's happening in the market, but most of our money comes from diverse employees sure. or diverse teachers.
Right. Mm.
So we're investing in that community. At any rate, that is starting to change now. Mm. I think if you look at the first component, the current VC ecosystem and the young demographic, if we just count on those two things, we're going to wait a long time. It's going to be generations, I believe. So then we got to go to the second phase. Okay, we got to find guys and gals with intention. Not only that, we got to find asset allocators who are willing to do it. Mm. So a lot of folks have come up now and starting their own funds, but it's hard to raise money. And that's fine. But a lot of asset allocators are starting to get in the game too. So that's a great thing to see. I look at the state of Illinois, for example. State of Oregon mm-hmm. On the pension side. I know California is starting to make some moves, which I'm really excited about. Sure. I've heard Florida and other places. That's where the money is. Mm-hmm. When I talk to managers, I always say, look, guys, I come from the private equity world, so I know I'm biased, but the future of your platform is not with these individuals you have a relationship with. It's with the states. Mm-hmm. It's with the foundations. It's with the endowments. That's the future of your fund.
Oh, interesting.
So I think that learning for kind of the emerging manager group is starting to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think at a good time because I see more foundations getting into this world of making commitments to diverse managers and diverse entrepreneurs, which is a great thing to see.
Sure.
You know, leaders in this area are the Ford Foundation, the Kellogg Foundation, the Cerner Foundation in New York, Margaret mm-hmm. Casey Foundation in Seattle, California Community Foundation here in Los Angeles. Led by amazing people who believe.
That's I did great. Not catch Utah as one of those forward-thinking states, but
I didn't say Utah. I will. I didn't say Utah.
Is did this, not say Utah.
Guys, I didn't catch that.
Utah, right?
yeah.
I'm in Boston. He's in Utah.
Okay. I'll mark Utah down as not forward-thinking. Yeah, there we go.
You know what, Rob? It's interesting you say that. We've been seeing some activity out of Utah, out of Salt
sure.
Lake.
Sure.
Yeah.
Diverse founders coming out of there.
Yeah. I hope so. You should. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, Marcus, we'll do a twist on, you know, we always ask for advice, but I'm interested from you, you know, with the economy, right, and the pressures the companies perhaps will face, or they're certainly facing right now in high inflation with also interest rate shock and type of environment. You know, what are you concerned about right now? And what type of advice are you giving portfolio founders and startup entrepreneurs?
Do you know there's an old saying that says when the United States sneezes, Mexico catches a cold?
Mm.
That phrase is said a lot if you live or work with Mexico. So I don't expect anybody to know this who's listening. But the analogy here is that it's the same thing in the United States with diverse communities. When the U.S. sneezes, and I'm talking about the capital markets, diverse communities catch a cold. So my concern, what I worry about, is that as we go into this challenging economic environment that we see a pullback from asset owners allocating capital to diverse managers and diverse managers pulling back from making investments in diverse founders or other. That one I'm not too worried about. I'm worried about no one does a deal by themselves. You need other investors to come in. I'm worried about the other investors who say, you know, we were making an effort to invest in more diverse founders, but stuff's hitting the fan. And we got to retrench here and stick to our core tried and true strategies of investing in folks we know. I'm worried about that. And I'm worried about asset allocators pulling back. Up to now, I believe that what I've seen is asset allocators, the foundations, endowments, and others of the world, they're very conscious and thoughtful about this. And they don't want to, I believe most of them have no intention of kind of pushing forward on this and then retrenching and pulling back. I see a lot of committed folks, and I'm really happy and grateful to see a lot of leadership there of folks who are very committed. In the back of my head, I do worry that things get really bad in the economy and folks just say, we're stopping. And you know, this program we started for diverse managers or new emerging managers doing this stuff, we're going to put a little time out on that. That's a worry for sure. And then, of course, I worry for the, you know, diverse founders. Something happens as a diverse founder. If your peer, who is white male, let's just say, from Stanford, if they raise $1 million for a certain round and you're trying to, you have the exact same business and you're raising the exact same amount of money, you'll raise $700,000. You're always 30% below. Well, that person over there with $1 million, they have an extra 6 months of runway. That gives them extra time to hit milestones to raise the next round. You have $700,000. You have fewer networks, fewer relationships, and you need to hit the same milestones. Because if you don't, you're in a very bad position for the next round. In fact, you may not get to the next round. And if you do, it may be a very bad next round. The next round for that person, they'll raise $5 million because they hit their milestones. You might raise $1 million, $1.5 million because you haven't hit your milestones. It is a very challenging time. Even when the economy is great, it's a challenging time. So if you put on top of that a difficult economic environment, that's my concern. That's my worry.
Mark, it's such a great conversation. One final kind of wrap up question I have for you is how can our community, our listeners, be of support to you and your overall mission at Vamos Ventures?
Well, I don't know who's listening, but if it's an asset owner, we're raising funds too.
All right.
Starting next January.
That's
We'd love
awesome.
To hear from you.
Absolutely.
And if you're a founder and you're a diverse team, regardless of background, we'd love to hear from you too. Whether you want to or need to, the recognition part aside, it's about introductions and feedback and happy to do that. And then three is, I think advocating and shining a light on the opportunity and the opportunity that derives from not only the economic benefits, but the, I think, the national imperative to invest in the future of America is super important. And so I would ask folks up and down this chain, asset allocators, consultants, fund managers, entrepreneurs, that this is not about, hey, we need to cut this community a break. Hey, we need to do this community a favor. It's not about that. It is about, especially in the Latinx community, it's about a $2 trillion consumer market. It is about a very young, long runway consumer. It is about a community that's incredibly innovative, creative, resilient, and entrepreneurial. These are the things that we're investing in. It is not about a handout. It is about an amazing opportunity as investors and entrepreneurs. And if, look at California, if you don't mind, I'll just take a minute to say this.
Sure.
California, this my home state, that I love.
Yeah.
this is where two worlds exist, but don't meet. The world of venture capital, 50%, if not more, all venture capital dollars are managed here and invested here.
All right.
50% of all VC backable companies, et cetera, obviously are here. When we talk about the Latino community, there is no state in this country that has more Latinos than this state of California. The state of California, as I said, city of LA is over 50% Latino and Latina. The state itself is 40%, 41%. There's no state like that in this country. Texas is 38.
Texas, yeah.
So when you look at these two worlds, the venture world, no doubt this is the place for venture. In the Latino world, no doubt, this is the number one state with Latino, you know, entrepreneurs and community, but they don't meet. How is that possible that they don't meet?
I have a lot of theories, but okay.
certainly we have theories. So one of my favorite things to say is when you look at the top five states from an economic perspective, California, Texas, Florida, New York, and Illinois, those five states represent 40% of the U.S. GDP. Five states, 40% of U.S. GDP.
It's incredible, right? Yeah.
Those five states, the Latino community is the largest community in each of those five states. Sometimes by a lot, like California and Texas. So if we're not investing in this community, that's the problem.
Yeah.
And I don't mean because, oh, poor Latino community. No, it's a problem for
California.
You're
missing an opportunity. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a problem for the leadership of this country on a global scale. Sure. That's the problem. This is not about, why don't we do this? No, this is a we must do. So I think this is a great time for leadership to think about how do we best integrate, support, invest in, develop this new America, right? People should be thinking about this from Washington to Sacramento and other state capitals and boardrooms. How do we, because this is the future we're talking about. And I don't know if that's happening too much. So that's where we need a push, I believe. And I'll say one last thing. I may have said a lot of things that make it sound like it's horrible and difficult to be a diverse entrepreneur and founder.
No,
you know, the whole
70%
to 100% fundraising, and it takes forever and it's hard. It is hard. It is absolutely hard. And life is not fair. This is the life we have to deal with. We got to try to make it better, and we're doing that. We have to fight to make it better, but it is not impossible either. It's not impossible, and folks have done it, and we are blessed to live in an amazing country with a lot of money, and I always tell folks that what changed things for me with Vamos Ventures was that one day I said, somebody told me, Marcos, you have to look for the investors that are already looking for you. Because I was pounding my head against the brick wall, trying to get money out of that brick wall. And finally, this person said, Marcos, this is a big country. A lot of people have a lot of money. How is it possible you can't raise $25 million, our original target?
Yeah.
And I said, you're right. How is it possible? I can't raise in this country with so much money. I'm obviously not talking to the right people. So what I tell founders many times, and I'll tell the audience, is that if you're starting a company, if you're raising money, if you're a fund manager, if you're starting a restaurant, doesn't matter. Find the person out there because they exist.
They exist.
That's already looking for you, already wants to do this with you. And that's a challenge, but I think it's a helpful perspective.
We should end on that. Marcos Gonzalez of Vamos Ventures, this has been so much fun. I learned so much. There's a lot of things I have to keep thinking about after we end today. So thank you so much for all the insight. And you're an incredible ambassador to the venture capital community, and really excited about the things that you're doing for Hispanic and Latinx founders. And, we wish you the best of success going forward. Come back and see us if you don't mind. Come back and see us, Marcos.
I'd love to.
And there's so much more to talk about.
There's so much more.
So many dimensions. But you guys are doing a great job. Thank you guys for doing what you do. Focusing on DEI is super important. 10 years ago, people would roll their eyes when you mentioned DEI, let alone ESG. And I remember the times of corporate responsibility, that was the way in. But now it's people have like, okay, we need to face up to this and do something about this. So
absolutely.
Thank you guys for running this and bringing a lot of voices to the forefront.
That's great. Excellent. You're welcome. Thank you. So good to meet you. We'll be back. Welcome back, folks, to our Calm Reflection section of our podcast. We just finished speaking to Marcos Gonzalez of Vamos Ventures. I say this about every guest, like, oh, how interesting they were, how energetic. But like, I literally did get chills talking to Marcos. Just in terms of what he shared, I took notes, so I'm looking to the side of the computer here, but like he recited his like four values of Vamos Ventures, really appreciated that. He said something that really stuck with me. Always start a company with a partner because it's tough. Rob, I could not have done this without you.
Check.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was powerful. And then I loved when he was sharing his own experience about the startup world and how it wasn't necessarily a motivating factor for him. It wasn't the inspiration to start Vamos Ventures as he started his own startup, but what instead it gave him the understanding, like the appreciation, the experience and knowledge and the empathy of being a venture capitalist. And I thought that was really revealing in terms of character and authenticity and really just a leader, right? Like these qualities of inclusive leadership. So I really appreciated that. What were your takeaways and thoughts?
I really liked the phrasing or thinking about the fact that leaders need to be thinking about what the new America looks like. I just liked that. Just that image was really
make America inclusive
again. That framing was really interesting to me. And I know that there's forces in this country that don't want there to be a new America, but it is certainly unavoidable. And I thought it was just really, and when you think about it framed that way, it's inspiring and, you know, something like that we can all work on together and there should be, you know, that should be a positive thing. So loved it. Thanks so much to Marcos Gonzalez. Yes. So many great learnings there today. Nadia, what time is it?
We didn't even look. Yeah.
We did our coin flip, rants and raves. You have drawn again, raves. I'm sorry.
A rave. Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
All right. So this week, according to NPR, Nicole Mann became the first Native American woman and second overall Native American to go to space with the latest SpaceX mission. Nicole Mann is a Marine Corps pilot and NASA astronaut, as well as a member of the Wallaki tribe. I apologize if I enunciated that incorrectly. I tried to Google enunciate that. Of the Round Valley Indian tribes. Fun fact, the first Native American man to walk in space was John Harrington in 2002.
Very cool. Yeah, so another great first.
Another great first.
Another giant leap forward for womankind.
That's right.
Yeah.
Personkind. Yeah.
Personkind.
Let's not generalize gender either, right?
Well, personkind. Right? Excellent. Awesome. Well, thank you for that. My rant this week, Nadia. Hey, are you ready? You ready for a rant?
I'm always looking forward to your rants. I just want you to know that.
Yeah, it's so much easier to rant these days, right? So my question is do all senators from the South have to have played or coached football? Is my question. Right? You may have heard about the self-described not smart person, Herschel Walker, and his nauseating run for Senate in the state of Georgia. But I don't know if you heard this week that, not to be outdone, former Auburn football coach Tommy Tuberville, who is somehow a senator. This is perplexing.
Don't know how that happened.
This week also made racist remarks, somehow conflating the idea of reparations with being pro-crime. So the NAACP sent out a tweet reading that it is important for so-called DEI-focused corporations to display their stance based on who and what they are aligned with. I couldn't agree more. Corporate backers of Tuberville, I guess Tuberville. I remember him as a terrible football coach for Auburn. Those corporate backers include Home Depot, UPS, and of course the flying penis rocket company Blue Origin, owned by Jeff Bezos. Do with this information what you like, Nadia. I get that he's a senator from Alabama, so he has to say things like this. But
does he?
No, I think if you're the senator from Alabama, you have to say things like this. But you know, have we completely given up on having serious people run for federal office? That's it. I'm done.
Okay. Yeah. All I can say is, because I'm just very like election oriented, election action is my jam. Like,
yeah.
Midterms are coming. They are so important. I don't care who you vote for. Just go vote.
Vote inclusively.
Yeah, vote inclusively. Vote with your conscience.
Excellent. Thanks again, Nani. Thanks again to Marcos Gonzalez of Vamos Ventures. Inclusive Collective is a production of Refilia Media. We would love to hear from you. I can't emphasize that enough. So send us your feedback at inclusivecollective@refilion.com. You can also find us at LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. If you like what you heard, be sure to subscribe and rate wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to get in touch with either Nadia or myself for consulting, you can check out Nadia at nazconsultants.com and Rob at decanoconsulting.com. Thanks again. We'll be back with you all next week.